scoured the murdered land, kicking up dust clouds so thick that day and night were indistinguishable. 5 days of wind. 5 days of the unending howl of a war's collapse into madness. On the sixth day, the wind dropped just enough that day returned in the form of a deep, withered twilight. It was time to abandon the Rhino. Capanus was the only survivor. The troop hold had been breached. Sealed in the driver's compartment, he had held out this long. But the poisons of Talon were working their way inside, even here. His body temperature rose as his system fought to keep the weakened viruses out. There was no real shelter in the Rhino's blasted shell. Only a more prolonged end. Capanus could hear the wind whistling through the rents in the armored hull. It was taunting him. It was the sound of defeat and death, and it could outweigh him. For those 5 days, he had fought with the Rhino's systems, trying to coax life back to its engines. His struggle was futile. The tank was as dead as his brother's. But during those days at night, there had been nothing else to attempt. Now, he had a choice of endings. He chose to go. Doing so would hasten his death, but he would act as though there were a real chance of shelter. His war was not over. Not yet. Capanus slid the driver's door back and entered the troop compartment. His brother, Iron Warriors, was seated on the benches. They created an illusion, not of life, but of discipline. Though their bodies had turned to sludge, their power armor remained upright, as if their corpses were still ready to march into battle at his command. The dust and ash of Talon spiraled around their boots and fell upon their shoulders. It had already turned the iron gleam of their armor to a dun shadow. There was strength in the silhouettes, but it was slowly being buried. The wind would blow the dust into the Rhino until it filled the interior completely. Capanus climbed through the torn side hatch and out of the tomb. The dust cloud swirled around and past him, revealing and concealing the landscape. From one moment to the next, visibility went from 0 to 1,000 meters and back to 0 again. He saw the battlefield through shifting veils. Huge, tortured shapes were a deeper black against the gray. Those shadows were titans. Some had been melted into slag. They were now low, jagged hills. Others still stood, frozen in mid-combat. Allied and enemy alike, they had all died in the great roar. Between the motionless colossi were the tanks. The blast had hurled them across the plain, and they lay variously upended, on their sides and torn open. Capanus had been lucky then. Not many had landed intact. The dust swirled over a portrait of a single moment of war, arrested in time. Capanus was surrounded by towering gravestones. They were an iron cry of agony, preserved, extended, and given voice by the mindless shriek of the wind. Capanus's visor display flashed its warning runes. The radiation levels were extreme. Even protected by his power armor, prolonged exposure would be lethal. The blast had also scoured the land of the worst of the viral toxins that had killed this world, but the contamination was still present. It was still reaching through his rebreather. His fever spiked, but his body was holding fast. The deliquescence had not yet begun. The clash of poisons had bought him some time. Not long, a few minutes, he guessed. He would spend every second fighting, and he would fight for a few seconds more. The situation was no different, except in degree, to any number of suicidal campaigns that his legion had faced. That was what the Emperor, in all his perversity, had decided the Iron Warriors were good for. How many times had Capanus and his battle brothers struggled through impossible sieges and over the landscapes of death worlds, leaving a wake of their own blood, only for Dawn or Gilliman or one of the other pampered favorites to swoop in and claim credit after the fact. If Capernaus died now, his end would have no substantial difference from the rest of his life. At least he was free of the Emperor's hypocrisy.
Do you call this a victory?
He shouted to absent enemies and a demigod as distant as he was false.
You choose to destroy your own forces along with ours? That is weakness. That is why you will lose.
He started walking. He had a vague impression of a great shadow not far to his right. It was a destination. It was a goal to strive for, futile though it might be. He would have a purpose, even as his organs disintegrated. His boots kicked up puffs of ash that flew off in the wind. As he walked, he switched through the Vox channels. He had been doing so for days, and the results were the same. Nothing but static, an electronic echo of the wind. Death in the air, on the ground, in the vast and tortured shapes, and in the ether beyond. The wind pushed against him, mocking. It shouted at him that he was alone, the last thing moving across the ruined battlefield.
Look at me!
His voice sounded too thick. His breath rasped. There was liquid in his lungs. It grew thicker. They were beginning to disintegrate, turn into fluid, seeking to drown and suffocate him at once. Speech was difficult, but he would give voice to his defiance.
Look at me! I live. I fight on. You will not stop us. You made us. Too well. We will march until we crush you.
He coughed, straining for more of the deadly air beyond his suit's reserves. He marched faster. The huge shadow gathered definition and mass. He could distinguish the gigantic limbs from the trunk. Then the way before him cleared for a moment, revealing the Titan. It was a warlord class named Ostensor Contritio. Over 30 meters tall to the carapace and almost as wide, it was a hulking mass of immobilized destruction. Its arms bore great cannons pointed forwards. Capernaus glanced in the direction the Titan was facing. Some distance away, there was wreckage. A battalion of tanks. Ostensor Contritio's final kill. As the dust rolled back in, Capernaus saw a faint red flicker in the viewports of the warlord's head. Just one weak flash, but that was enough. A trace of power. Capernaus could use that. He wasn't marching out of bitter defiance now. He was racing against his death. He had a hope of survival. More importantly, he had a hope of vengeance. He reached Ostensor Contritio's left leg. Overhead, above the Titan's waist, the lower access hatch was partly open. What was left of a Mechanicum acolyte lay halfway across the threshold. Robes in a vaguely human form were drenched in black, organic soup. A pair of limp mechadendrites hung beyond where the head had been, as if trying to reach an imagined salvation. Death had reached into the Titan, and this fool had been panicked into thinking that it did not also await him outside. A fluid, multiplying pain was spreading out from Capernaus's core and into his limbs. His movements were becoming sluggish. His joints felt loose and burned with acid pain. He didn't have much longer. Scaling the seized pistons of the leg, he hauled himself upwards towards the hatch, seeking hand and footholds wherever he could. Once inside the warlord, he slid the hatch shut. Adamantium armor, many times thicker than the rhino's hull, now shielded him from the poisoned world outside. All that remained was to purge the viral taint from the interior. His helmet lamp lit the confines of the dark space. There were more biological remains here. They had been servitors, he guessed, from the limited, specialized tool limbs that sat in the sludge. Further in was another door. He grasped the wheel in its center, turned it, and hauled it open. He crossed the threshold into the engineering deck. There were more Mechanicum dead here, tech priests who had stayed at their posts until the end. Their servo skulls littered the floor, eyes dark and wide as though in shock. Capanus staggered to a workstation that faced the core of the Titan. It was beside a large cluster of ducts running to and from the warlord's reactor shields. The station screen was dark, and one of the liquefied operator's servo arms was still resting against the clavier. Capanus moved the limb aside and examined the controls. The pulse from the blast could well have shut down the Titan's systems. Perhaps the priest had been in the process of restarting the mechanical heart of the god machine. Something had begun, or at least survived, for that light in the Titan's head to have been possible. Capanus found the circuit controls. One of them was open, and he turned the others on, one by one. A groaning, hissing life returned to Ostensor Contricio. Lumen orbs strobed, then settled at a dull crimson glow. The deck and walls shook as the Titan's heart struggled to beat once more. He would grant it life, and in return, it would give him the same.
Primary systems activating. Reactor failsafes engaged. The blessings of the Omnissiah be upon us. Warning. Malfunctions in secondary and tertiary nodes. Locations 117 to 135.
Capanus examined the tech priest's servo arms, found a plasma cutter, and fired it up. He examined the ducts, eventually tracing one that vented the power plant's heat upwards into the exchange system at the rear of the carapace.
Warning. Reactor failsafes disengaged. Extreme hazard. Heat spike detected. Coolant system failure imminent.
He deactivated the failsafes and cut through until a rush of superheated, radioactive steam burst from the pipe. Within seconds, it had filled the engineering chamber. Capanus dropped the cutter and began to remove his armor.
Warning. Radiation levels in excess of working maximums. Evacuation advised for all organic personnel.
He gasped as the scalding death hit his exposed skin. He stood in the middle of the cloud, a fresh clash of pain erupting in his body as his gen-hansed biology absorbed the radiation.
Poison against poison!
His melanchromic organ went into overdrive, his skin pigments blackening instantly. He breathed deeply, and the burn reached into his lungs. It scoured the slow rot from him with an even more deadly agony. Poison against poison. He stood in the lethal cloud for a full minute before the dose overwhelmed his ability to process toxins. The virus was dead, and he began to die in a new way. He dropped to his knees and vomited out a black, stinking mass that began to eat its way through the deck. Then he stood again. Little more than the force of his own will kept him conscious. The steam was damaging him much faster than he could heal, but he waited another full minute before he reached for his battle plate once more. If even a trace of the virus remained, he would be done. His mucronoid began a last-ditch attempt to preserve him. A waxy shield oozed from his pores, sealing him off from the lethal atmosphere of the chamber. He fumbled with the armor, his fingers growing slick. Carapace, chest plate, power pack. One piece at a time, he took sanctuary from the radiation. His vision graying from exhaustion and pain, he closed the manual redirect valves to reroute the exchange system leak. When he was done, the radioactive fog lingered. He felt as though it had penetrated his skull, and his senses were overwhelmed by a grand mosaic of pain. He was one shock away from falling into a Susan coma, but he stood still and tried to force the darkness from his mind. His work was not done. He had shelter, but it would serve no purpose if he could not fight.
Iron within, iron without.
Both had carried him this far. They would see him back into war. The Loyalists, no doubt, thought that they had turned the Iron Warriors' victory into a mutual defeat. All they had done was throw more of the same hopelessness at the Legion that it had battled and surmounted for centuries. He would show them their error. He would show them his Legion's iron. The vow made, his pain took him into the night. He fell, unconscious even before he hit the cold deck.
Engine Seer Meridius.
Crackling woke him. An electronic scrape in his ear. The internal vox was active. There was a gasp. Someone drawing a deep breath before finding the strength to speak again.
Engine Seer Meridius. We have power again. Are you well?
The woman's voice was that of a mortally wounded warrior. Capernaus dragged himself back to the workstation in silence. He was no adept of the Mechanicum, but he was a warsmith. Though he was not privy to the most arcane mysteries of the Titans, he knew how to shape a battlefield. He knew how to shape war itself. So he would make Ostensor Contritio answer to his will, one way or another.
Meridius!
Capernaus was surprised by the strength of it. The speaker was dying. The alchemy of desperation and hope was the fuel for the cry. He would answer, but not yet. He succeeded in running a rough diagnostic of the warlord. Power appeared to be reaching most quadrants. The potential for movement and attack was there. That left the most important motive force, the Princeps. If this woman was only one of the Moderati, there would be little he could do. He would be stuck in an immobilized shelter, no better off in the long term than in the Rhino. He worked his way to the upper levels of the carapace and found the pods of the Moderati Minoris. They were closed, but they had not been sealed from the contamination of the virus. The gunners were dead. They left behind ruined uniforms and the stinking slurry at the bottom of their pods. Capernaus wrote off the secondary weapons.
Meridius, why don't you answer?
Capernaus reached the reinforced hatchway to the Titan's head. Outside it were the remains of another tech priest, twin servo arms slumped against the door, and the metal marred with scratches and burns. Another sign of mindless panic. What had the adept hoped to accomplish? The bridge space beyond was a sanctuary, only as long as the door did not open. Capernaus turned to the comlink on the wall to the right of the door.
Meridius is dead.
At first there was only silence. Then the voice spoke again.
Who is this?
I am Copernos, and I am your only hope. Identify yourself.
Princeps Benrath. You are of the Legionis Astartes.
Are the Moderati Majoris still alive?
I'm not sure. They were an hour ago, but they haven't spoken since. They don't answer anymore.
You are unable to confirm one way or the other?
I can't move. When the pulse hit us, there was a surge before the power went down. The neural feedback was devastating. I am paralyzed.
What about your connections to the Titan?
I'm not sure. Until the power returned, I was linked to a void. I can feel its life now, but not the machine spirit. Ostensor Contritio is as paralyzed as I am.
The fact that Benrath was severed from the machine spirit was to be expected. Copernos had seen the system breakdowns in the diagnostic. The machine spirit was still alive, but isolated.
I saw light in the cockpit earlier.
The head has enough reserve power to function in isolation for an extended period.
You didn't eject?
What purpose would that have served?
None.
Good. Benrath was fully conscious of her situation. Separating the head from the crippled body of the Titan would only have shifted the position of the survivors in the blasted land. There were no retrieval teams coming. Not for anyone. Whatever events remained to play out here, they would do so cut off from the rest of the planet.
Princeps, I can end your paralysis. I can give you back your purpose.
The phrasing did not come naturally. To offer rather than to command went against his training and his being. But he needed her consent, along with that of the Moderati Majoris, assuming either was still alive. If they were this close to death, a struggle of any kind could be lethal.
You can restore Ostensor Contritio to us?
She sounded understandably skeptical.
Not exactly. I can restore you to it.
He waited for Benrath to deduce what he meant. He gave her some space to approach the idea on her own, to assimilate its reality and its implications. He was standing still, but all the same, he was reshaping the battlefield.
We have no neural bus, no amniotic tank.
So Benrath knew what was coming, and was already halfway to acceptance.
I am aware of that.
You are able to proceed without one?
Yes.
And the process is irreversible?
Would you ask that of a Legion Dreadnought, honored Princeps?
No. Forgive me. The weakness of my body is not the weakness of spirit.
Then I will begin. Know this. The interior is highly radioactive.
I understand. Once I open the seal, there is no going back.
There never is, Copernos thought. Everything is irrevocable. There was a metallic clunk and a hiss of air as the circular hatch parted in the middle. The two halves slid aside. There was little room for the warsmith to enter the compartment. The two Moderati Majoris sat in thrones to the rear of the space, flanking the one occupied by the Princeps in the forward section of the Titan's skull. The armored glass eye ports looked out over the broken landscape. The wind had dropped a little more since he had entered the Titan. Obscuring dust clouds still billowed over the field, but he could see further now. The graveyard of gigantic corpses was endless. On and on and on went the ranks of iron monuments, preserved in their rage. But he also saw flashes of distant gunfire amidst all the death. He was not the only one seeking to bring the corpses back to a semblance of life. He had won some time for himself. He wasn't dying anymore. But he had stopped one countdown only for another to begin. A new battle was coming. The embers of the war for Talan were struggling to reignite. He would not be found wanting. He checked the Moderati. They were unconscious, their breathing labored, but there was enough life there to suit his purposes.
Are you there?
Kapanos could see the top of Benrath's shaved skull above the back of her throne, and her hands resting on the ornate arms. She didn't move. Her paralysis was as extensive as she had said.
I am here.
He began his work. It took time, and he had precious little of that. Even so, he shot that concern from his mind and focused solely on the task. He had a foundation upon which to build. The interface cables connecting Benrath and the Moderati to the Titan's manifold were still viable. He moved back and forth between the Warlord's skull and the workstations of the engineering deck. He never set foot beyond the Moderati stations and never saw Benrath's face. The Princeps was a voice behind a throne, growing ever weaker. It acquired her consciousness a bit longer, though, and prepared the diagnostics to track the flow of neural data. The machine spirit was there, silent but raging. To give it a voice, he had to find the point where the communications had been severed. When he was ready, Kapanos raised Benrath over the Vox once more.
Speak to it.
I can't.
I know. Your failure will be instructive.
I hope so.
She fell silent. A moment later, traceries of power lit up the workstation's screen. A few seconds later, Benrath gasped and the screen dimmed.
Princeps?
No answer. She was unconscious, not dead. Her life still registered on the screen in the form of faint pulses from her cerebral cortex. They barely registered, their paths fading into darkness almost immediately. But her effort had shown him the problem. Strong as her mental command had been, it had run into a damaged interface tangle, one level down from the skull. The Barnes found a maintenance hatch not far from the location of the interface. He opened it, expecting to find a crawl space much too small to accommodate him. Instead, there was a narrow catwalk that twisted into the gap around the Titan's reactor housing. Kapanos moved inside, surrounded by pistons the size of pillars, cables as thick as a Thunderstrike's cannon. The connections stretched into the gloom above and below him. He called out to the raging machine spirit.
I'm coming for you. The Princeps bent you to her will. I will do the same. You seek to vent your wrath? Good. You will do so at my command.
The damage was not hard to find. Above his head, to the right of the catwalk, was a cluster of torn and fused cables. With the tools he had salvaged from above, he cleared the pathways as best he could. Some lines were torn beyond repair. Some connections had melted together in a mass that could never be differentiated. He was satisfied when he made his way back up to the primary workstation and examined the new energy tracks that appeared. He had not expected to restore all the pathways between Benrath and the machine spirit to their original state. Nor did he wish to. He had merely created the possibility of communication. Now he would shape the nature of that dialogue. He would shape the battlefield. It took him another day to make his preparations. It was now the seventh since the blast. On this day, there would be no more rest for the dead. In the skull of Ostenso Contricio, the Princeps and the Moderati Majoris were still unconscious. They did not stir as Copernicus amplified their life support and performed rough intubations. The mechanism that had kept them alive this long would now preserve the spark of life in their bodies for as long as the Titan survived. It would also hold them prisoner. He was most careful as he worked on Benrath. He would have rejected the word gentle to describe the operation. It was precise. It was calculated. Unnecessary and premature shocks could easily defeat his purposes. His approach was as tactical and merciless as any siege he had ever led. In truth, what he was attempting was a siege. Little by little, he embedded her into the machinery. He could not install more ports into her skull and spine, but he jacked more cables into the existing ones. The resulting drain on her mind could shatter the body, so he increased the energy load even as he reduced its need. He augmented. He cut away. He made the princeps one with the god machine. And when he was ready to open the links between Benrath's mind and the machine spirit of Ostenso Contricio, she awoke. He was standing between her and the window ports, and she saw him for the first time. She saw the colors of his armor, and her eyes widened.
Traitor!
Copernicus leaned in, savoring this fragment of justice reclaimed from the inferno of defeat. Corrupting a loyalist titan was a fine act of reshaping and a successful siege. But he wanted the princeps to know. His victory would have its witness, an eternal one.
You trusted blindly. So did we once. But we learned our lesson in time. Have you? I think not.
She was too weak to struggle. Even so, she tried. The skin around the sunken orbits of her eyes tightened as her will raged against a body withered and bound. Copernicus waited. With his task on the verge of completion, now he did have the luxury of time. He wanted to see Benrath realize the full extent of her powerlessness. He did not regard his triumph over a single loyalist as petty. His wrath was as justified as hers was futile.
You will be defeated.
Copernicus grunted.
Not by you. No. Not by you. And so, I keep my promise.
He completed the last of the connections, then restored the neural link between the princeps and the machine spirit. Benrath screamed as her consciousness flowed away down into the manifold. It left her body behind. The flesh became nothing more than an organic bag, a conduit of fuel to keep the mind alive. She was cocooned in cables, vanishing into the mechanism of her throne, and only her face was visible. Its final expression, before it fell into the slackness of living death, was one of utter horror. Copernicus knew why. He could not experience the fusion that Benrath was undergoing. He could not conceive of it. But he understood exactly what he had set in motion. Before the blast had shot the Titan down, the machine spirit's fury had been forced into compliance by the great will and discipline of the princeps. But she had been weakened, and he had stripped away the manifold defense mechanisms, leaving Benrath vulnerable to a machine spirit so maddened by its injuries that its sole purpose was nothing more than unceasing, indiscriminate destruction. Given free rein, however, it would send Ostenso Contricio on a rampage as uncontrolled and unpredictable as the winds of a hurricane. Benrath was now immortal, whether she liked it or not. She was locked in a perpetual struggle against the anarchic rage of the machine. Copernos had linked her mind to those of the Moderati Majoris, comatose but still neurologically viable. She retained just enough strength to channel the power of the Titan. She could direct the warlord's movements, but she could not choose their purpose or their target. Copernos had reserved that power for himself. He stood at the rear of the bridge space, looking beyond the thrones through the armor glass eyes. The control mechanism he held was crude, little more than a collection of electronic prods, each with a different function. It would be sufficient. He depressed a trigger that delivered a synaptic shock to Benrath, impelling her to walk. And so, Ostenso Contricio walked. The warlord lurched with the bone-shaking growl of an iron city on the move. For the first time in 7 days, the Titan's earth-cratering steps resounded throughout the machine. Ostenso Contricio began its march through the land of corpses. In the twilight distance, appearing through the curtains of dust, other half-glimpsed giants were moving. Copernos saw the flash of giant guns. Death had not had its fill on this battlefield. And nor had he. The Vox was still consumed by static, but Copernos had confidence that he would know brother from enemy. He depressed triggers to the left and right, and the Titan's great arms rose, weapons cycling up. He had no illusions. He was entombed within the warlord as thoroughly as Benrath was. He would never leave this cursed place. But his war was not over. He was in command of a terrible wrath indeed. This was a triumph of a kind. It was the one that he had sought. And so he wondered about the new dread that descended over him as a battle lost and finished now lumbered once more into a gray nightmare, unlife. He felt the shadow of the future fall over him. The shadow of a war as futile as it was eternal. Talon by John French. Performed by Annie Orlington, Sean Barrett, Saul Reichlin, and Luke Thompson. Directed by Samuel Gunn. Produced by Heavy Entertainment for Black Library.
Sample from Eagle's Talon, Vox Fragment 7. Please review and confirm recording clarity before accessing full archive.
Choke point breached! They're coming through!
How long until they're past you?
Commander Gavis, this is Arcan. Their auto-defenses are back online. Advance on target stalled. This is Daelfon. Choke point 1 has failed! Pulling back to choke point 2. They're going to be into prime arterial corridor in 6 seconds.
They're behind us.
All units, this is Gamus. I am cutting prime arterial corridor. Charges firing in 5, 4, 3, 2, detonate.
Detonation good. Prime arterial corridor closed. That should slow them down.
Theophon, how long until they bypass the wreckage? Arkad, are you at the bridge atmosphere control?
We have heavy resistance, Commander. We... Brother! We are...
Arkad.
This is Theophon. Choke point 2, reached and holding.
Arkad, what is your strength and status?
Commander, we...
They're on us! By God! There are too many of them. We cannot hold this position.
Arkad, what is your strength and objective status?
Commander, this is Theophon. Choke point will be overrun in 30 seconds.
Arkad.
He's gone, Gamus. What are your orders?
Arkad.
We are losing this, brother. There is no other choice. If we do this... then it must be now!
Recording clarity confirmed. Proceeding. Accessing full records designated Eagle's Talon. Authorization accepted. Retrieving initial file command notation. File accessed. Praise be to the machine. Praise be to the seeker of secrets.
197 days, 10 hours, 17 minutes, and 31 seconds from the first strike of the Battle of Talon, the macro transporter Eagle's Talon impacted onto the surface of the planet. The effect on immediate ground operations on the southern continent was profound and has been recorded extensively elsewhere. However, the incident's role in the course of the wider engagement is difficult to judge. The Battle of Talon is still a recent event in the ongoing civil war. At the time, the fall of the Eagle's Talon was thought to be the result of action by an element or elements from the Loyalist Imperial Army warships within the Talon system, or a catastrophic failure of the ship's own protocols. Both of these presumptions are false. The Vox file attached to this record constitutes signals captured from a 7th Legion strike force on board the Eagle's Talon prior to its atmospheric re-entry. Signal capture was accidental and the result of passive operations in place throughout Perturabo's forces. This record, like the means by which it was obtained, remains unknown to all outside of our Legion. The strength of the Imperial Fist's strike force is estimated to have been 3 squads, designated as Gamus, Theophon, and Arkad. All 3 squads were of recon configuration, with light armaments only. Infiltration onto the vessel is believed to have been by gunship and micro hull breach. Mission Command was embedded within the strike force as part of Squad Gamus.
Accessing Eagle's Talon incident, Vox Fragment 1. Record proceeds. Praise the machine.
Squad Theophon at waypoint 1. Zero resistance. No sign of detection.
Confirmed, Theophon.
Proceeding to arterial corridor Beta.
Theophon, hold position.
We're exposed here, Commander. The plans were not accurate. There are 4 spurs off this junction, and the marked gantries have been removed. There are cutting torch marks on the walls and floor. We have no cover, and this ship is waking up to drop a lot of armor onto the surface. If anything comes through, we will be compromised.
Understood, Therefon. The order stands. Hold your position.
This is Arkad. Conveyor shaft breached. Grav chute's active. We are ready to ascend.
Ascend, Arkad. Hold at the second waypoint.
For Dawn and the Emperor. Squad Arkad at waypoint 2. High levels of crew and servitor activity. Zero resistance, no signs of detection.
Confirmed, Arkad. Therefore, you may proceed.
By your word, Commander. This ship is vast.
You should have familiarized yourself with the layout, Arkad. I hope you will not be surprised by other details.
War is the gift of the eye and the ear, not the mind or the cold numeral.
I suppose I can hardly dispute the words of the Primarch. This ship is in the top displacement class for a vessel of its type, but it is not unique.
It is impressive, though, even to the likes of you, Commander.
The likes of me, Arkad?
I think Sergeant Arkad is meaning to respectfully use this tactical communication channel to imply that you are long in the tooth, Commander.
I do not take compliments from my subordinates, Arkad. Even if our units have a reputation to maintain.
Squad Theophon, entering Arterial Corridor Beta now. It is in use, Commander. Floor vibrations. There is a tracked unit moving nearby, but out of visual.
Closing or moving away?
Moving away. Vibration is reducing.
Can you reach the hatch to the power conduit?
Yes, if we move now.
Proceed, Theophon.
Do we need to do this? We can discard this objective and advance on the primary.
Proceed to the power conduit and set the charges, Theophon.
Aye, Commander. Squad Theophon, proceeding to secondary objective Gamma.
Confirmed, Theophon. Arkad, hold your position. One step at a time, brothers.
By your word, Commander.
Record access proceeding.
The Imperial Fist's infiltration onto the Eagle's Talon occurred simultaneously with a major but unnamed engagement in the center of Talon's southern continent. This engagement was dominated by Titan and Knight-class war machines, and at the time, it was the largest since Loyalist reinforcements had arrived in-system. Given the weight and power of the forces involved, it was possible that if either side achieved a decisive victory, then they might be able to drive an overall tactical advantage and then claim victory on Talon as a whole. The Eagle's Talon was the largest of a number of transports positioning to drop forces onto the southern continent. Had it succeeded, it could well have tipped the battle in favor of the traitor forces.
Accessing Eagle's Talon incident. Vox Fragment 2. Record proceeds. The machine dreams. The machine knows all.
Squad Theophon at portside power conduit. Designated secondary objective Gamma. Zero resistance. No signs of detection.
You are using a direct link, Theophon. Is there a problem with your Vox equipment?
The Vox is clear, brother.
Then proceed to complete the objective and return to the approved mission frequencies.
I wanted to speak without Arkad hearing.
The time for that has passed, Theophon. You have made your misgivings known. I have heard and understood your concerns, and deemed them of less weight than the needs of this operation. Proceed with the secondary objective. That is my will.
If the primary mission fails, will you do it? You will detonate the charges?
If this ship completes a full tactical deployment onto the surface, the battle below will be lost.
And if that... that battle is lost?
Theophon, this is not the time.
If it is lost, then what will happen? Will the war for Talarn end? Will the Imperium be lost? Or will everything simply continue as it was before?
Victory is made by every detail, every battle, great and small. Never forget that, brother. No fight is insignificant, and we cannot know what deeds the fate of all might rest upon. All we can do is fight, when we can, with everything we have.
And if we detonate a charge on this power conduit, it will cut the ship's engines and push it into the planet's grasp. It will hit the surface. The immediate blast will flatten everything across half the southern continent. What of our allies down there? What of the battles they fight? Fire from the sky does not care whom it burns.
Most forces loyal to the Emperor are already in shelters beneath the surface.
One crack, just one, and the poisoned air of Talarn will get in, and then... And then there will be a shelter for nothing but corpses.
There are always prices to be paid in war, brother.
I know, Gamus. I remember. Fal is far away, but I have not forgotten what survival costs. But it is for us to bear that cost, not mortals. This is our war, a legionary war. Our kind began it, and we should pay the price for our own victories.
It is not what I intend, brother. If the primary objective is met, then none of this will be necessary.
And if that fails?
Then the ship falls.
And those below?
No one lives on Talarn, brother. Only the dead who have yet to go to their graves. Place the charges as planned, Theophon. Detonation box keyed to my control.
By your word, Commander.
Record access proceeding.
The taking of a large spacecraft is no simple task. The number of troops involved to successfully control or purge a population of thousands, even tens of thousands of human crew, are similar to those needed to conquer a conurbated city. Combined with the issues of fighting in a confined and profoundly hostile environment, boarding missions are well named in the Imperial military doctrine as Zone Mortalis, the ground of death. The most common method of taking a ship is the targeting of either the primary or secondary bridge. Without effective command elements, even a warship is just a lump of metal drifting in the void. Because of this vulnerability, most command points are the most heavily defended locations on a ship. To take or destroy a bridge by boarding action is normally a matter of slow attrition by specially equipped troops, or a lightning-fast strike by an elite force with overwhelming strength. To try and take a ship by infiltration is unusual. The actions of the Imperial fists on the Eagle's Talon indicate a lack of suitable forces, but also a degree of imagination that we have not previously credited to the Sons of Dawn. As in all things, assumption is the seed of ruin.
Accessing Eagle's Talon incident, Box Fragment 3. Record proceeds. The machine is all. All is the machine.
What is your situation, brother?
We have a problem. We are moving through the rear spinal levels, but the plans were not accurate, Commander. The layout is totally different. We've had to divert, and the only option was to use the vents in the upper crew decks. We are right on top of the enemy.
What is the enemy's strength?
Uncertain, but substantial. And they are at battle readiness. They may be human, but a lot of them are naval armsmen. Plus, there are hundreds of mustering tank crew. We came close to compromise three times. We are holding position in a cavity above the companionway marked as 6-7 Gamma 2 on the original plans. As far as I can tell,
there is a sub-arterial passage leading to the primary target, not 10 meters from your current location. Can you shuttle your squad across the passage to it?
Enemy activity is constant. They move without pattern, and the longest gap has been 6 seconds.
Can you work your way back and take a different route?
We can't go back. A crewmaster moved into the last location we came through, and there is another problem.
Tell me.
There is a Mechanicum presence in this area. At least cohort strength. The Laxi and Myrmidon troops and Legio Cybernetica Manibles. They are on full alert, sensors primed.
Your suggestion, Sergeant. Speak plainly.
First, we need a diversion, Commander. Something to get their attention, but not jeopardize the mission. Something that could just be a severe accident. We could blow the hoist on the main port conveyor, drop it down 50 decks. Potentially a lot of damage, but they shouldn't realize it was deliberate for at least 50 to 70 minutes.
My squad can reach the conveyor shaft from our current location. Go on, Arquette. What is the next step?
Even with the diversion, we are going to need to eliminate two of the crew before we can proceed.
That is a substantial risk. Why?
Because there are armsmen posted within 5 meters of the vent we would have to drop through.
You have planned both kills?
Yes. Sniper shot for the first through the grate. We drop through at the same time. Take the second, pick up both corpses, take them with.
The guard's absence will be noted, even if the kills are clean.
Correct. I estimate that we will have no more than 7 minutes until their absence is discovered.
You will have to reach the primary objective inside that time and destroy it. You can do that?
Yes.
Very well, Arquette. We will proceed as you suggest.
Thank you, Commander. You honor me.
Record access proceeding.
The preoccupation with honor amongst many of the legions is a factor which can only be seen as a weakness in the current climate. In the time of the Great Crusade, it had merit in bonding warriors together to a single purpose and maintaining the ideals for which the Crusade was supposedly being waged. Now, it can be seen only as a flaw in those that still carry it, and more importantly, an advantage ripe for greater exploitation. What function does honor serve, other than to create hesitation when there should be swift action, and to create doubt when there should be none? The following is a pointed illustration of this flaw.
Accessing Eagle's Talon Incident, Vox Fragment 4. Record proceeds. The machine sees all. Every deed is illuminated in the eye of the machine.
You were worried, brother. I could hear it in your silence after Arkad spoke of honor.
We are in the middle of a mission, and you think this is the best use of a personal Vox channel?
I am your brother in blood and bond, Camus. Need I list the battlefields that we shared to earn the right to question if my commander harbors unspoken doubts? I do not think I need request that right. It is mine already.
Yes, perhaps it is.
You need not doubt Arkad, brother. He is young, that is all.
He is not. No one remains young in this war.
He never knew the Great Crusade. He is one of the first of us who have only ever known war with ourselves. In time, all Space Marines will be like Arkad. That he still thinks of honor in such times should give you hope.
There is no honor in what we are doing, only necessity.
I know some amongst the Legion who would say that our kind have no place claiming honor. Shadow dwellers and assassins, some call us.
We fight our battles in silence, not dishonor. If the Primarch believed otherwise, then the recon squads would never have been adopted.
You seem to make an argument against your own worries, brother.
We are old, my friend. And we were old when we went into the shadows to make war.
But Arkad is no aspirant, brother. He was blooded and foul. I have seen few better as a squad leader, even among those with decades more experience.
But from that battle he came to us, to a war against our enemies, fought without ever looking them in the eye. This should not be the cradle in which the young learn to fight. It should be where the old come to die. Where we come to die.
A more melancholy way of seeing ourselves I cannot imagine.
The chances of success are slim, brother. The chances of survival...